Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
You're listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
This is Paul Hawksby.
And Max Rushton.
And this is the H&J Daily with some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. Well, we were joined by a man today I'm sure we're going to hear from again. He's the co-chairman of Gloucester City. He had quite a story to tell. And he was quite the character, Max, wasn't he?
He was excellent. You know, quite often chairmen are not sort of broadcast savvy, but he milked his 10 minutes, didn't he?
He was brilliant. Steve Hill joined us, the author. He's written Wall of Sport, My Descent into Multi-Screen Madness. He was very entertaining. Jamie O'Hara joined us to talk about the art of the free kick and his memories of it. And, of course, we had a bit of a chat about various things. We got you involved. And yet another groundbreaking Cruyff or Binny. I was setting the questions, Max was answering them. But how did he do? Let's find out. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Max.
Good afternoon. Nice to hear Jim saying Roland de Chatelet, wasn't it? I've not heard...
It was a... Well, Mr. Sangar was in, but it didn't stop him giving us a solo de Chatelet.
We got one de Chatelet. When you practice... Everybody practices a Jim, don't they? I mean, when you practice... The two footballers that I... Before de Chatelet, the two that I would really work on were Schutte Avaladze and Peter Lovenkrantz. I don't know if you can improve on that, but
they're good. That's good. I've not heard him say that a lot.
I mean, I think that was a really that's sort of 2008 Sky Sports new vintage. There's not a lot to say about Avaladze or Lovenkrantz at the moment, is it?
I don't know. Yeah.
Do you know who I feel sorry for, Paul?
Okay, we're going to have to narrow that down a bit.
The Arsenal marketing department. Obviously, when you're... as you can see, with Tottenham are doing well, aren't they?
Yeah. Right?
And so obviously their social media can be lots of fun. They're all playing cricket, having a nice time. But you've still got to shift the merch, haven't you? You've got to shift all the stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So today, you know, Arsenal tweet out... I like the fire emoji, inspired by the 90s. The Arsenal Adidas Originals collection, hashtag created with Adidas. A picture of Ainsley Maitland-Niles looking really quite cool and quite a nice tracksuit top.
Yeah.
But obviously, you are ripe, aren't you, for Danny. At least we're going to get relegated in style. Robin, I'm going to give the same amount of effort into buying this as the players gave in their previous four home league games. Rosie, I like this one. These are fire, but I am low-key embarrassed to wear them. Ah, kiss.
Wow.
So there we are. What can you do? Still got to try and shift it. But people are angry, aren't they?
When a team are struggling, and you're right, the merchandising department have got to push it hard. It is quite difficult. I mean, I doubt if the head of marketing there sits there and reads all of the comments.
I think
it would be a bit soul-destroying.
I think the head of marketing is there on
the
replies.
But, you know, your team is life, not just for Christmas, isn't it? So
I think, totally,
you know,
fans will still
buy that. There's thick and thin merchants out there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's gallows humour. They'll still go and buy stuff. They'll still buy things.
I don't know how schadenfreude you have. You're not that kind of guy. You don't.
No, because I believe in football karma. I'm a bit like that with Andy. I'm not one to crow because I know that these things are cyclical.
Yes.
And
not really around cyclical for Tottenham fans.
No, not really. No. I mean, if I was ever going to crow, this would be the time to do it. But, you know, I think we're always one step from disaster.
Sure. You're not scrolling for Arsenal fan TV to see four evenly spaced men.
I mean,
be
look,
angry.
If stuff's sent out on social media, of course, I will watch it. Yeah. And there'll be but I'm not going to start. I've got mates who are Arsenal fans. I'm not going to get in their face and why? Because it'll come back to bite me on the bum.
Right.
It always does, doesn't it?
Sure,
really.
Yeah. Has anyone discussed Jack Nicklaus's grandfather-in-law?
Well, not on this show. No. I think when you sent it to me, I had to read it a few times because it just didn't register.
No.
His daughter's got married, isn't she? His granddaughter.
His oldest granddaughter, Christy Nicholas.
Yeah.
My son Jack's second oldest child just got married to somebody called Todger Strunk. I don't have any comments to make, but I just, you know, it's an interesting name.
Todger Strunk.
Todger Strunk.
Do you think at some point when he's been over to England and said, like, yeah, can I just get a name in, looking for a table in a Todger. Sorry? And it's that thing of it obviously meaning nothing in the States. So how did he get that nickname, do we know?
Is it not his name? Is it not his actual name? I haven't done enough research. I believe he's called Todger.
No one christens their kids Todger.
I think they might. He does sound like a golfer, doesn't he? Can you imagine Bob Bubka really going in? Just missing the cut there, Todger Strunk.
Well, and Andy, great news for Todger Strunk. It'd be great, wouldn't it? Well, Bob did tell us the other day that he saw... who was the golfer? Sandy Lyle in suspenders.
So, oh, really?
Yeah, he did tell
us that. I didn't know about that.
Braces, of
cabaret
course.
Act.
But yeah, Todger. I mean, I'm trying to think. Is his name Todd? And you know when the kids, you know, when the kids are young, if he's little Todd, he becomes little Toddy, little Todge, not little Todger. But you know what I mean. It could be a derivative.
That is possible,
of that.
Isn't it?
Yeah, I reckon he started out as Todd.
Okay. Well, anyone has
Todd. Was it Todd Stunk? Did you say Todd
Strunk?
Todd Strunk.
Strunk. It was close to Shrunk, which would be really would be a really disappointing.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
state
yeah.
of affairs, wouldn't it? Anyway. Everyone has a name.
That's right. We'd like to hear from you this afternoon on the day you were forced out of retirement. But I suppose that's what happened to Petr Cech last night. One of the Chelsea staff, of course, very senior position at the club. But he's still registered as a player. And the under-23s played Tottenham last night. And Chelsea won 3-2. It was quite a lively game. Some tackles flying in from what I saw. But Petr Cech was in goal for the under-23s. And it did... I mean, I imagine with a bit of reluctance that he had all these young, fit, keen lads.
A chat in the dressing room. He just won't fit in. Do you think he's trying to fit in, going, you know, talking about Tinder and things. He's like, come on, granddad.
You think he was? Yeah. He might have been. So high-fiving everybody when we didn't want to know.
Spondicious. This is really spondicious, isn't it,
So we'd like to hear about the time, sports-wise, you were forced out of retirement. Someone said, "Oh, go on, look, we've only got 10, or can you just make up the numbers?" I know you haven't played. No one expects anything of you. It'll be fine. Look, it's just a bit of fun. Cut to them on your back the first time you give the ball away.
Exactly. Yes, I put it out on Twitter. We've had a few good ones. John says, "Not me, but my dad. He came over to Australia from London 8 years ago for a holiday. The day he arrived, I had a five-a-side final at the Albert Park Pit Lane courts. He came to watch. The keeper didn't turn up. Dad was forced to play 20 years after his last game. We won, and he still displays the trophy." That's good. Slightly different one from Perry. "I hadn't played in goal for 9 years. I was asked to play for a local team by a friend at the age of 36. I had a howler. We lost 7-0. I heard at one point, 'Shoot from anywhere, he's useless.'"
That's the thanks you get for making up the numbers. There was a knock at my door one afternoon. I can't remember in what circumstance, but sure enough. And it was somebody I knew said, "Are you doing anything, H?" I said, "Not particularly, no." He said, "Do you fancy refereeing a football match?" And I said, "Well, no, not particularly."
No.
And they said, "Well, look, we've got a game on. The ref hasn't turned up. I just thought, I couldn't think of anybody. Have you refereed before?" I said, "Well, yeah, kids football and stuff like that. Could you turn out?" And I said, "Yeah, go on." I didn't want sort of 22 lads to have turned up. No. And they said, I think it was supposed to be a league game, but it wouldn't be recognised as a league game because of me, but they all wanted to play.
What age are the kids?
Oh, they were, no, they were sort of blokes in their 20s.
Oh, right, men's football.
Like, yeah,
okay.
Yeah, men's.
Oh, right, so up in your face, I hope.
I go down there and I walk out and they go, "Mate, thanks ever so much. Both captains, it's really good of you. I know you're sort of, you know, within 5 minutes." "What are you talking about, mate?" Right, oh my God. Yes. And at the end of it, I went home. I sort of slunk off after. I didn't have a bad game, I didn't think. But
Did you book anyone?
I had no linos. No, I didn't book anyone. Okay, it wasn't that officious. Right. But I had nobody running the line. Complete mess. But then I went home and then the person who'd asked me to come out just turned up with this big bag of change which it had a whip, the money the ref would have got.
So it was about coins.
20 quid in coins. No. A bit of bronze in there.
Oh, you're a good man for doing that.
Yeah, I mean, was it cold? It was fairly cold and muddy. I was really regretting it once they got on my case. I wasn't going to flounce, you know. But anyway, look, it happens. You get called out of retirement. "I was forced out of retirement for tennis, age 58, says Danny, in an exhibition in Australia as my son withdrew. I beat Leighton Hewitt, the former Wimbledon winner, one set. Did you really,
Come
Danny?
On.
Or was that a dream you had? I think that may have been a dream you had.
Paul in Liverpool wants TV formats for Todger Strunk. Do you? Is that a road we want to go down?
I think it's high risk.
It's high risk.
I wouldn't take calls on it.
No.
I'd like an element of control.
Look, it's not my show, is it? I'm happy to take the risks here.
I mean, I think you'd predominantly have to deal with a surname, and I can't really think of Strunk the place out. I don't know, is that like a sort of makeover show, like a Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen, where he comes in?
It's better if you leave off his first name off that show.
Yeah,
isn't it?
That's right. Yeah. Anything involving his first name, I think, is very high risk. But anyway, look, we'll see if you can work your way in. TalkSport.com/HNJ, text to 81089 or tweet to TSHNJ, TSHANDJ. Tell us your stories in person, but not your Todger Strunk TV format. 08717223344, forced out of retirement like good old Petacek last night.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Paul Hawksby and Max Rushton here on Talk Sport. You're trying to be as delicate as you can around the name of Jack Nicklaus's grandson. I suppose he's married into the family, isn't he? Yeah, he's married Jack's eldest granddaughter. And his name is Todger Strunk.
Yeah.
We've never quite got to why. Honey, I strunk the kids, says Daniel. A documentary in which Todd, she's calling him Todge now, that's better, I think.
Yeah, that's
babysits.
Better.
I'm not sure how good a documentary that will be.
Matthew says, strunk in the middle with you. Todger goes around the Australian outback visiting sheep farms looking for the best from the sheep world. That's from Matthew. From
best of the sheep world. That, you lost interest in that yourself, didn't you? Anyway, we've all been complaining about the fact we can't go and watch our teams play at home. No crowds in there. It's been ages since we've been along to a match. Well, imagine being a Gloucester City fan, because they've been waiting to watch a game at home since 2007. But the crowds are back this evening, and joining us now, co-chairman of Gloucester City, Alex Peterham. Good afternoon, Alex.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think it's worth pointing out, obviously, you've not been doing repairs to the ground. Well, you have been, but that's not the reason why you've not been there for 13 years. It goes back to the floods in 2007, doesn't it?
Yeah, so 2007, this season had finished, and we were in the pre-season. We had fans around the ground doing the usual non-league repairs that fans and owners do, painting fences and whatever else. And then if you cast your mind back to that summer, it was exceptionally wet, and the River Severn rose and rose and rose, and our ground flooded. And there's the iconic photographs of the water up to the crossbar. Mm. Then we basically spent 13 and a half years then in exile, playing at Forest Green and Cheltenham Town and Evesham, which, to point out, is a different county. That's actually in Worcestershire. So we spent 13 and a half years to get back home. I get asked all the time, why has it taken so long and how come the insurance didn't pay out? Well, people don't realise that a couple of years before, the pitch and the clubhouse flooded, not to the same levels, obviously, because we were able to play the following season, but due to that, our insurance obviously then excluded flood risk from our policy. So sadly,
when it
flooded this time, we were very much left, pardon the expression, high and dry, because we were far from high and far from dry. And then all of a sudden, you know, we had to fight the council and fight everyone to get planning permission, because we needed to build on the same ground, but we needed to increase the pitch by 4 metres in height.
Right.
Numerous fallouts and fighting happened with various local authorities. And, as you can imagine, every man and his dog was involved in Gloucester. It took us a long, long, long time and an awful lot of money. And we finally started work at the start of this year, back in January, straight after Christmas, ironically.
Mm.
And then as we were building, we were getting winds of obviously the issues and the troubles over in China with COVID-19. And we were starting to have problems with deliveries and floodlight deliveries being late and seat deliveries being late because they were obviously being made overseas. And then we eventually fought, and we managed to get the ground completed for the start of the season, which was always our goal. And obviously, at that point, we'd gone through the first lockdown.
Yeah.
And we managed to return home, but we had no fans. So 13 and a half years later, even though we had a ground and we were back home, and it was all personally paid for in cash with myself and my co-chairman, Eamon McGurk, we physically couldn't allow anyone in.
But they're back tonight. They are back tonight, Alex. That's the important thing, tonight, of course.
Yeah. So we're obviously heavily reduced on capacity like everyone else is, but we're just delighted to be able to welcome some fans back in tonight.
Excellent.
It feels like it's a huge game, and that isn't me being disrespectful to any, the opposition or the trophy itself. It just feels like it's an FA Cup final for us rather than an FA Trophy second round. You know?
Sure, yeah, understandably.
God, it makes it just show sort of, you've lived this for such a long time. You sound so sort of shattered, from, really tired from the whole thing. It must be a massive relief for you.
It really is exhausting, So we were taken away by the floods, and then we were held back and stopped by COVID-19. So we got approached by Netflix to see if we would do a film on it. Right. A documentary about the journey.
You should have said yes. I mean, it can be quite lucrative, that. It could have paid for the
floodlight.
Hopefully it could have paid for a bit more than that, and we could have had a go at a bit of a trophy run or an FA Cup run or even getting out of the league. So
how many can you have tonight, Alex? How many can you have in the ground?
978.
Well, that's very specific, isn't it?
I had to think very carefully. Yeah, 978 is the exact number. I don't quite understand how the maths work, but I don't understand a lot of the rules that are around.
And how many do you normally get? I mean, how many?
The ground itself can hold 4,000. We would probably expect around about 1,800.
Right. Okay.
So that would kind of be. That would kind of be where we were. Around about 1,800 would be a typical Saturday crowd. You've got to bear in mind, Gloucester's the largest, or the only city in the country that has never had a league side.
Wow.
Never had a league team. And when you think about, there's 200,000 chimney pots in Gloucester. It really is a big city.
That's a great stat, isn't it? That's one to tell your mates in the pub.
Is that the plan, then? Is that the dream?
Well, we're currently top of the National League North. So we very much would like to... We always wanted to come back to Gloucester and have a go. So we found a bit of a budget. We seem to spend it all on sweets and hand sanitizer and fairness. But we did manage to find a little bit of a playing budget, which is now all, as managers can do, that's managed to evaporate. So we're currently top of the league. We're hopeful that we can be in and around the business end at the end of the season, because all the analogies of you win nothing at Christmas are exceptionally true. But so we're hopeful that we can be in and around it come the end of the season. If we can get into the playoffs and roll a dice and get lucky, then...
Well, I think you deserve a bit of luck. I think you definitely deserve a bit of luck. The other thing is, people didn't hear wrong, Conference North. So on the face of it, not very northern, is it?
Your show's not long enough to get me started on that.
But it's the cut-off, isn't it? It's other teams come into the league and then they move the parameters.
We are the most northern team in the southern, or the most southern team of the northern section. So in the past 6 years, we've played in both tiers twice.
Wow.
The problem, and this is a message to the National League, right? The problem they don't seem to understand is it's very hard for us to have a player on a two-year deal at Gloucester, because we can never guarantee we'll be in the north or the south.
Right.
So naturally, if we're in the north like we are this year, we would naturally look for our recruitment to be in and around the Birmingham area and that way. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
If we're in the south of the country, we would naturally look for our recruitment to be in and around Gloucester, down to Bristol, into Swindon.
Right. That all makes perfect sense. Yeah, I can see that.
The problem we have is when they play the game of roll the dice and upset Alex, which they do every single year.
That's what they call it. I've seen the minutes.
It's really good. It's on Dave.
I've seen the minutes. Roll the dice and upset Alex, it
that,
says.
It's a game, right? They've literally got a game of snakes and ladders, and they put my face on the board, right? And they go, do you know what? Let's upset the geezer. Let's move him from the north to the south.
To the south,
and I look
at
my players, and they all go, so all of my players love to sneak in the clause expenses. And I'm sat there going, I could lose thousands. Because if I get a player from Bristol, because we think we're in the south, and then we get Blythe away first game in the season, like we did last season, thank you very much, National League. I've got fellas travelling about 7 hours.
Yeah.
One way.
Of course.
So you did a stretch after that, don't you? 7 hour drive.
Is that the furthest? What's the furthest you plane away from your place then? Is it Blythe?
The show's not long enough.
Oh, okay.
Let's
be honest. Yeah. Last Tuesday night, what? Sorry, Alex?
Last Tuesday night, we were at Gateshead.
Oh, wow. Gateshead on a Tuesday night. I mean, honestly, that is ridiculous.
It really is utterly farcical. Wow. They love to move us about the country at all different times of the night. the only winner in this is KB Coaches, and now I've got a plug on national radio.
I might give you a dizzy now. That's it. Good old KB Coaches. Yeah.
So much of this I hadn't considered.
Yes, it's the practicalities of being a lower league co-chairman. Look, Alex, we're sadly out of time.
Yeah, it's the end of the show.
I told you we'd run out.
Hope it all goes well tonight. And look, it's been a long road back, but I'm sure it'll all be worth it. I said we should say Paul Groves. You might get some Grimsby fans coming down to pray at the altar of Paul Groves, your new manager. He's a club legend there, isn't he?
He's an absolute proper bloke. What a superstar he is. You know, we're delighted to have him, and we're delighted to get him in from the sunny heights of Israel.
He was at Maccabi Haifa. He was in India with John Gregory, and
they were moved into the Israel North League.
On a Tuesday night. All right, Payne.
In October, he was playing against for Maccabi Haifa. Was playing against Tottenham Hotspurs at the new stadium there. And now on a Tuesday night, he gets the dizzy heights of a 5-hour trip on a coach at Gateshead.
Well, Alex, we'll keep in touch. I hope it all goes well. Thanks very much.
Take care. See you soon.
Take care. He's a boy, isn't he?
He's great.
Yeah. Alex Peterham there.
I'd never thought about floodlight delivery either. Something I never thought about. Obviously, you need to get them from somewhere.
Yeah.
I'd never thought about that process.
But like he says, you know, they flip between the north and the south. And that recruitment thing, he's right, you know, because he doesn't want them all travelling up and down and all the mileage and everything.
So. Occasionally, Cambridge get put in the northern section of the Papa John's Jaffa Cake Cup or whatever it is. Yeah. And it makes me feel very northern.
You feel a bit more northern.
I get a whippet and a flat cap and walk around town.
Well, it's important not to be clichéd about the north.
I think you're probably right.
The northern transmitter goes a bit quiet.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast
from TalkSport.
Can I thank Ian, who has tweeted me and James Wade to say that Max says wants to know how much he owes you, James.
So, for fixing the clear.
See if James comes back in the next couple of hours.
He's probably forgotten that whole thing.
Danny says, as a painter and decorator, I always book the customers that are the best tippers in just before Christmas. They usually double up. It's all about knowing your client base. What if they don't want anything painted? You just turn up at the door with a pot of emulsion and say, I'll do your hallway.
Yeah. Okay, Jimmy Bob White, good old Jimmy, says, on the subject of tipping, Henry Blofeld ended up staying at one of my friend's houses. They had a mutual acquaintance. When my friend's wife was cleaning the room after Henry had left, she found he'd left an envelope with a tip in it.
Oh,
that's quite nice, just for, that's blowers all over, as they say.
But I tie myself in knots with knowing who to tip and who not to tip. It's a very difficult, it's a difficult path.
Have you ever
negotiate.
Been tipped, Max? Has any part of your life been...
Yes, yeah, I was a, without wanting to stick to any stereotypes, my summer job was a punch chauffeur in Cambridge. I had a, had a little boater.
Did you really?
It was very good. It was cash in hand. That was good. And one half of your body got very fit.
Right, yeah.
Because, you're just pushing the pole up and down for... hours after
Would
hours.
You sing? Mel Sykes ever enter your punt, did she?
No, I didn't sing. I did once steal the League Cup while on a punt.
Eh?
Because
what a story.
The first ever game that ITV Digital did was Cambridge West Brom. I think it turned out it would have been cheaper for them to just pay everyone who watched the game to go.
And you're going
to
tell me now that Jim Rosenthal, who was left in charge of the trophy for ITV, went for a pre-match punt, which is something he likes to do.
So they're obviously like filming the pre-match. What can we do? So they take the League Cup out on a punt.
Yeah, okay.
So I'm punting one way with these customers, and then coming past me the other way is the League Cup. So I just lean down and pick it up and just spread it in my boat and punt away. Then some people with clipboards got very scared because I didn't actually...
Because you normally can't touch those trophies. You normally get, whenever we have a trophy in the studio, a couple of heavies turn up with all the trophies.
Or there's the special gloves.
It's like Spinal Tap, don't even look at it. They don't like it, do they?
Have the special gloves and I...
You sullied it.
It's heavier than you'd think it would be.
Yeah.
Many ex-pros will have lifted the League Cup, but for those who've never lifted it, quite heavy, worth quite a lot of money.
Wow, okay.
And some people were quite worried.
Didn't end up in the cam, though, did he?
No,
it?
No.
That wouldn't have been good, would it?
It's quite, I couldn't have, punted to the North Sea either, because there's a big lock in the way.
There's quite a lot of work to do there, that's true. But,
full of anecdotes today, eh?
I've got a few tips. I'm using them all up today.
There'll be nothing tomorrow.
Do you want a sporting tips anecdote involving my late dad?
Oh, I'd love one, yeah.
I've told Ronnie this, actually, when he came in, but my dad was doing some work in one of Ronnie O'Sullivan's dad's shops many, many, many years ago. And he came in to see how my dad and the other guys were getting on with this refit they were doing. And Ronnie's dad said, "Shall we have a cup of tea?" And they said, "Yeah, let's have a cup of tea." Well, apparently there was, but they had no sugar.
Okay.
So he said, my dad said, "I'll pop next door." And he said, "So he said, no, here." So he gave him 50 quid. He said, "Just take it out of that, get some sugar." So he came back from the shop next door with a standard bag of Tate and Lyle. And Ronnie's dad said, "No, you're right then, keep the change. Keep the change."
That's good, isn't it, from a 50?
Keep the change from a 50. Wow. But then three or four days later on, he came in again, Ronnie Senior, and said, "Do you have a cup of tea?" And he said, "Yeah." And he said, "Sugar for me." He said, "Oh, no, we've run out of sugar." Didn't work a second. He was, of course, he was just kidding. So there we are. The world of tipping in the world of
absolutely.
Sport.
Absolutely. I mean,
brought
world
together.
And the world of £50 notes. Extraordinary thing. Don't think I've ever had one.
Really?
Yeah. It's a different world, the £50
note. So, okay, if you want to bring the worlds of tipping and sport together, unlike Charlie the cabbie, has got in touch, because a lot of cabbies will now get in touch and they will say, "I'll tell you who doesn't tip." And it's a bit unfair, isn't it, really? Because, I mean, I know this person, so I think he wouldn't be having me on, but I don't want to.
Whereas
know.
I will just look, send them over to me. I'll read them out Saturday morning. Absolutely.
I'm sure this is the case, but some people tip, some multi-millionaire footballers tip and some don't, as we discover. So anyway, let us know. Talksport.com, text 81089, tweet TSH and J.
Paul, has all that nattering got in the way of Cruyff or Binney?
No, it's later.
Oh, great.
It's coming up later. And it's very topical this afternoon. Okay. Going to hear from the managers this afternoon as well. And you are telling us how many of these can we do? Oh, yeah, we asked you if you've ever been forced out of retirement. Petr Cech played for Chelsea under-23s last night, probably reluctantly, but he's registered as a player. I suppose, it's, you know, get back on the tools for a bloke like him who spends a lot of time in the office these days. This comes from Carl. Not played rugby for 2 years. Decided to go on the bench for a third team. Came on in the second half. Straight from the kickoff. Went to make a tackle and snapped my arm. Now officially retired. Arm snapping. Is that an official... I mean, it's fairly graphic. Five-second return, says Carl.
5 seconds.
So yes. if you were called out of retirement, forced out of retirement, talkSPORT.com/H&J. Text to 81089.
Richard says,
to TSH&J.
Yeah, ask to play for Rochdale Police Divisional Team. Tough place to go. Right. After not playing for 15 years because of low numbers. First game, ruptured my Achilles tendon. 3 months off work. Quit football for good. I now play ice hockey. Blimey, it's the reverse Petr Cech, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's going straight to ice hockey. Sucker for punishment. Yeah, keep those coming, please.
And just very quickly, Dieter Johansson wrote to The Sun, which is not a phrase you expect to use every day.
No.
He suggested a penalty shootout by Rebecca Vardy and Colleen Rooney to save everybody a lot of time and money in the courts. But it's, I thought that was, as ideas go, it's not a bad one, is it? I mean, do you think that would be the good way to sort it out? I mean, all great disputes from history settled via penalty shootout.
Is it against a goalkeeper? Like, is David Seaman in goal?
Yeah, you'd have a celeb keeper.
Right, you'd have a celeb keeper. Or like a Stig, like a keeper with a... Yeah. You wouldn't know who it was, and at the end, it says, oh, it's Tim Flowers.
Von der Leyen versus Johnson, and who better than the new Barnet manager, Tim Flowers?
Absolutely right.
A couple of minutes of looking back, yeah, showing that goal that Lettice scored. Sure. Everyone has a laugh, oh, yeah. And then he faces the penalty,
Frost, Nixon,
yeah.
Peggy Arfaxad. Right,
it's
marvellous.
So we want the goalkeeper from you, and indeed the thing that needed settling by penalty shootout within reason.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Hawksby and Matt Rushton here on TalkSport. Theo Walcott has been talking up his teammate James Ward-Prowse, understandably. Of course, he played with David Beckham, but he says, after every training session, I see James taking free kicks and I just sit there and remember watching Beckham all those years ago. I always thought I should have got involved with free kicks, but he was just too good. Now I see James and think, you're better. It's just the way he adjusts his run-up. It's always match-prepared. It's brilliant to watch and it is showing. He is always such a threat, especially when you've got players running at defenders and trying to win free kicks. It's almost a penalty for him these days. You know what I mean? Because he is...
Yeah.
He's fantastic, isn't he? Let's chat now to our very own Jamie O'Hara here on TalkSport, who's been known to put away the odd set piece. Good afternoon, Jamie.
Afternoon, lads. How are we?
Good.
The Roberto Carlos of Billericay.
Yeah.
Jamie.
Yeah. I wouldn't go that far, but I've scored a couple, but nothing like Ward-Prowse, that's for sure.
When you get that opportunity, so whatever club you've been at, Wolves or ever, or at Spurs, Jamie, when... You know, just to say, can I have this one? I'll have this one. Fancy this. I mean, I take it you've built up a reputation in training with players. And so they think, oh, yeah, Jamie can put it away, so we'll trust him with this one.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I used to be on free kicks at Portsmouth and Wolves and things like that. I would, as soon as you go in, you have to kind of, you have to go in and stake your claim for them, really, because a lot of teams now have obviously specialist players that can take free kicks. And I always used to just spend sort of 10 minutes after every training session just working on a routine. I think if you watch, you know, the best players' routines now, you talk about Beckham and Ward-Prowse and players like that, you know, they have a routine. So wherever they are, they set up the same. I think Ward-Prowse bounces the ball a couple of times and then puts it down and takes 4 or 5 steps back. But you know, I always took 1 or 2 steps, and that was just how I felt that I could get the timing right of where I obviously wanted to put it. But a lot of it as well is natural ability, in my opinion. Do you know what I mean? Like, you've just got that natural ability to get it up and down over a wall.
Mm.
But when I went in at Portsmouth, obviously I only went in on loan, and I ended up taking a lot of the free kicks just because in training I was the one who was putting them in the top quarter.
Right, okay.
And like, when you're at the end of training, how many are there of you queuing up and taking free kicks? And is there, because you always hear this cliche, he's last on the training ground, and I didn't necessarily have you down as last on the training ground, Jamie. But are there like 3 or 4 of you on the training ground? I hope they all leave, so I'll be the last on the training ground.
Well, you always get a few, don't you? There used to be the old centre half come out, want to do finishing after the game, and people used to just say, "Listen, you get in," you know. But, I think we had Ben Ayeen used to try and come out and take three kicks, and in the end it was like, mate, you're just wasting our time, like, no way. But you normally get three or four, you know, and you want to practice on them, and you normally get the ones who, you know, obviously the midfielders or the wingers are normally good at free kicks, or people take corners. It's also about a feeling as well. You know, certain players are better from different areas.
Yeah.
You know, Ward-Prowse is great from any area, but, you know, there was I used to like taking them from sort of 25 yards out. Mm. I think anything a little bit closer, used to get sort of like a striker or a Prince Boateng used to take them. And, you know, because some people like putting them in different areas. And I always felt like I was better from 25 yards out, from on the left side of the 18-yard box, where I could get it over the wall. And that side of the keeper. But you know, I think as well, when I watch Ward-Prowse now, his talent, the way he just steps up, it actually is like a penalty. You think he could put this anywhere, and it's on target like 90% of the time.
Mm. Becoming the free kick taker, you go into a new club, Jamie, obviously there's a hierarchy, there's boys already taking them. Being the one to say, you know, well, I'm here now. Is it quite difficult to get the ball off people to get the opportunity? Are they quite territorial when you go to a new club?
1,000,000%. I mean, everyone wants to take a free kick because it's a set piece, isn't it? It's a set piece. So it's a chance for you to go one-on-one with a keeper, you know. And, you know, obviously, there's a lot of people have got egos, especially in the Premier League and the modern day. A lot of players have got egos and want to be the one that steps up. But you know, you've got to score a couple from the start. You know, you've got to get off the bat and you hit a couple that go in. Then all of a sudden you state your claim. I think it's a bit like penalties when a new player comes in and says, I want to take penalties. As soon as the regular penalty taker misses one, you get the chance, you put it away, then that's it, you're on penalties. And I think it's a little bit like that with free kicks. You know, you've got to be consistent. You know, you've got to do it on a regular basis. And if you score one, that's it, then it's yours. And until that changes. But I always used to set up, you know, when I was at Wolves, I used to work on a set piece, you know, because I was left-footed, used to like to move the ball a little bit. Sometimes I didn't like taking it as a dead ball. We'd always try and set something up, try and move a defender or move the wall. And that always seemed to work better for me. But the players, they can just get it up and down now, like Ward-Prowse. It is unbelievable, and it's a great technique. But it's just work, it's practice, and it's a routine that you stick to. He doesn't change it. Whatever sort of distance he is, he still has the same setup. It's like a golf shot.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
And does the manager, you know, sure, you must be at clubs where the manager says, this guy's on penalties and this guy's on free kicks. Because quite often you do see, so for example, that last minute, you know, Spurs Palace and Harry Kane and Eric Dyer having a chat and sort of deciding who's going to take it. You'd imagine, you know, a lot of managers now, you know, take care of the finer details, and that's not even a fine detail.
Yeah, I know. I mean, 100% people are on free kicks, but I think it's also about a feeling in the game. You know, like, there's also a feeling, like, where, you know, you talk about the David Beckham one against Greece. He had five or six before and didn't get it. And Teddy Sheringham wants to take one because he feels like he's got the feeling he can take. But Beckham believes in himself so much. And I think that's the same thing, you know. Like, you might step up in the 8.5 minute. The player who's normally on free kicks is having one. Do you know what I mean? And he probably don't feel like taking one. So it's also about the feeling as well. But most managers will have definitely penalty takers, unless you're at Man United and you just let whoever take it. But,
that doesn't explain Harry Kane, though, Jamie, who is not great at free kicks. He seems to take a lot of them. They either go over the wall, they hit the wall, or they hit the wall and go over the bar.
I think he's got that funny technique. I think Eric Dyer likes taking them when it's a bit closer because he can get it up and down. Mm. I think if it's a little bit further out, Harry Kane likes taking them. He's on a straight foot one where it moves. You saw his goal, obviously, against Palace. He can move the ball.
Sure.
And I think from a set piece, when it's standing still, it's a lot easier to get the ball moving because you can just work on hitting a certain part of the ball, you know, and it moves a lot more. So I think that's why he takes them.
They don't go in very often, do they? I think if it was Harry Kane, someone would be taking the ball off of him.
Well, Bale took that one, didn't he, on Thursday?
Yeah.
Hmm. And Gareth Bale was obviously, you know, you're talking Tottenham. There's three or four of them who want to take them. And that's just down to someone being consistent enough to say, right, I'm taking it from this area and you're taking it from that area. And then you know each player's positions, where who's best at that. And now, when you've got really good players who can take them from different angles, like Ward-Prowse, then it's like you're taking free kicks from everywhere. But when you've got three or four players with different techniques, you can vary it up and change it.
Yeah. Jamie, good to talk to you.
Cheers, pal.
We're here from you Friday. Actually, when are you in before Friday?
Thursday morning I'm on.
Lovely.
I'll probably, I'll probably be on your one at the end where I'm making a mistake or two.
Oh, no, that's very rarely happens. Yeah, take cheers, care, Jamie. Mate. All the best. Take care.
Right,
Jamie O'Hara there. He's back Thursday morning with Alan Brazil. And then Friday evenings, of course, we're building up to game day.
Yeah, this is from Abs on tipping. So yep. I know we're a bit late. Mm. Many years ago, while I was living at home, my mum's washing machine packed in. So she called out an engineer and left me in charge and left some money to pay the fella. A few hours later, a chap turned up with a clipboard. He said, "Where do you want me to start from?" To which I replied, "It's in the kitchen and it doesn't spin. My mum needs it working." To which he looked a bit dazed. Anyway, he tinkered about with it and asked me for some tools, which I thought was a bit strange, and he managed to fix it. So all good. After that, another knock on the door, to my surprise, was a washing machine engineer. The first fella was an estate agent that my dad had arranged to market the house. Anyway, I gave him 20 quid for his services before he started measuring the house.
Did he fix it?
Yeah,
got
he
got it fixed.
Yeah.
Wow. Engineer, though, call out charge. He probably would have, well, sorry, mate, you know, I'm going to have to charge you.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Now, every Friday, Martin Kellner brings us a select week of sport on TV, hand-picked gems.
It's a great feature.
But Steve Hill has gone quantity rather than quality. Well, I mean, it's maybe a bit of both, he would argue. Steve, in his new book, Wall of Sport, My Descent into Multi-Screen Madness, tells a story of a whole year of watching sport on TV and, indeed, listening on the radio. Quite a lot of it to talk sport, we're pleased to say. Good afternoon, Steve.
Hi, Paul, again.
Yes,
hi,
good Max. To talk to you again. Hey, yes. This was, I mean, it's quite a lot of it is you go to games, you go and watch Chester play, then you watch a lot of sport on TV. Quite a lot of it happens in the bath on your telephone, isn't it? So I've noticed that's a place where you watch quite a lot of sport.
The iPad at the end of the bath, yeah. So occasionally during the World Snooker Championship, I can put two iPads at the end of a bath.
Wow.
Easily kill a couple of hours. I think at my lowest ever, I watched an entire Premier League game in the bath.
Really?
Chelsea Watford.
Did you run out of hot? Because you have to keep filling up the hot, don't you? You have to keep turning the hot.
Yeah, on. It's not very ecologically sound.
Was the book born then, Steve, of the fact you watch a lot of sport on TV and you thought, why don't I just sort of chart a whole year of it so I can get a record of what I actually do watch?
Absolutely, yeah. I didn't set myself a quest. I remember saying this years ago to friend of the show, Richard Foster, the playoff guy. He was picking brains a few years ago, and I mentioned it then. I ended up writing a different book, The Card. Remember, I came on a couple of years ago?
Yes, yeah, yeah. That's right, yeah. I mean, I've noticed that bit in the book. Andy was off that day. Sam Delaney was in.
Yes.
And yeah, that's right. And you say quite clearly, neither of them had read a word of the book, you said, rather unkindly.
I was hoping you hadn't got that far. I was hoping you have this one.
Well, I tell you, it shamed me into reading quite a lot of this one. No, of course not. But it's radio. It's not just telly. It's radio listening. It's you immerse yourself in the media of sport all day for a year.
Media experience. You guys are sat there in the mothership. I mean, you're talking about sport 24 hours a day. Well, you know, this is the world we live in. So there's a little bit harking back to the good old days, but also recognizing that these are the good old days. I mean, you can literally watch sport from the moment you wake up. I mean, I'm just looking at my schedule tonight. I've got Chester Bradford Park Avenue in the FA Trophy. That'll go on the projector. Two Premier League games. Then the dart starts tonight. You have to watch every single dart of the World Darts Championship.
I don't know about the good old days. I do sort of feel sometimes. Like I the other day sent a tweet out saying, look, when I run football, I would say absolutely there is no football on a Thursday night. There's none on a Friday night. You can have two games on a Saturday. Nothing starts before 1:30 because it's too early. Yeah. Don't you think, Steve? There's just you can't have too much of a good thing, or am I not contractually allowed to say that out loud?
Before he answers that, let me just point out, on Friday the 29th of June 2018, Steve said, arrest day, in the bath, I watch a repeat of Panama 1, Tunisia, Tunisia 2. And it's in. So, I mean, I think the answer to that is no, isn't it, Steve?
Well, that was the day after England-Colombia, wasn't it, I think? So I wasn't feeling at my best. So right. I thought, yeah, we need to get up to date with the World Cup. Again, a World Cup, you need to watch every game. This is where split screen comes in. But also, the book is written in 2018, World Cup year, which was difficult because I had to pick up my son from school at 3 and there were 4 o'clock kickoffs. So he spent a lot of time with a packet of crisps in the pub in front of France v Peru. Or something. Max, yeah, as you were saying, too much sport. When sport disappeared in the summer, it was like a breath of fresh air. I felt released. I'd sat in the garden and read about 10 books. if it's not happening, you don't miss it, I think.
Yeah.
But I think it's the fear of missing out. I mean, if it wasn't there, I mean, who would care? But
did you
imagine if I...
Sorry, carry on.
Go on.
No, I was going to say, if you... no, it's one of these. It's a Skype delay moment.
Yeah,
you,
it really is. Yes.
You go. Over to you.
Caller, you're through. I was just saying, imagine if I don't watch the darts tonight and there's a 9 darts, I would never forgive myself. Over.
Well, I do agree with that, but I wondered, you know, at some point during this diary, did you not think, I started this and it's Europa League and I could just watch a detective drama. I could watch Vera for an evening.
Well, I do watch high quality drama as well, but what I don't watch any soaps. I've not watched a soap since Ken Barlow decked Mike Baldwin, left him on the cobbles.
It's a great scene.
I just thought, that's it, I'm done. I've been watching this for decades, I'm out. And I've not watched a reality show since. I watched the first series of Big Brother, nothing since. Oh. So that frees up a bit of time.
That's true.
Yeah. But yeah. Is there a sport you won't watch, Steve? Is there one that you draw the line somewhere? But I'm looking, there's quite obscure sports. You're watching sort of climbing at one point, I noticed.
Olympic youth climbing on the red button, yes.
On the red button. Actually, it's not like you happened upon it. You had to go and look for it on the red button, Olympic youth climbing. It's a sickness, man. It's mad.
I do struggle with rugby, to be honest. Rugby is fairly low down in my priorities because, I just don't know what's happening. A lot of people roll about and then suddenly it's a penalty. But I actually enjoyed that. There was an England game the other day that I actually quite enjoyed without knowing what's happening. But that's the other thing. A lot of the time, I don't know what's happening. I don't really know the rules of cricket, despite having watched it since the 80s. And I am trying to drop American things because I watch an entire NFL game and 5 minutes later, I can't actually remember who won or what happened because, you know, culturally, geographically, it just means nothing. It's just a lot of running about. Sometimes I watch a game, I don't realise which team is which.
I think there's something quite interesting in the way we consume sport now. You were mentioning you've got your projector there and your laptop here and your TV there. And quite often I'm watching a football match and, you know, Mrs. Russian doesn't really like football, so I'll have it on the laptop unless it's a really big game and there'll be, you know, Bear Grylls on the telly. Yeah. And then I'm on Twitter on my phone. And then I realise I haven't actually watched any of the game. And it's just sort of... You're better off just turning your social media off.
Yeah. Well, I remember, Max, you tweeted the other day about trying to simultaneously watch 3 penalty shootouts. Do you remember?
Yes.
That's the essence of the book, really. And, you know, exactly. You don't know what's happening. You're almost better just choosing a game and watching it. Because nobody actually watches football these days. You sort of look up when there's a bit of VAR, look up for a penalty. I mean, I'm trying to watch the snooker now. Judd Trump looks like he's through.
Yeah.
But,
You see,
at the end of the day, you don't know what's happened. You're like, what have I actually just done with my life? I think that there was a low point. I got to 3:30 a.m. I was watching a repeat of Premier League darts. They'd have a brief moment of realisation. Daryl Superchin Gurney taking on somebody. I did think, what am I doing with my life?
Yeah. Well, this was you've charted this for the book, the whole of 2018. But, I mean, could you have easily written the same book in 2019 and 2020, you think? Or is it tailed off a bit?
Well, like, I'm trying to let the American stuff go a bit because I really don't know what's happening. But yeah, I mean, luckily 2018 was a normal year. Obviously, this year has been turned on its head. So it does almost capture one of the last normal years of sport. But also, like, the way, you know, the time of the year is defined by what you're watching. April is a snooker. The darts is Christmas. Imagine Christmas without the darts. Absolutely pointless.
Yeah.
And of course, Christmas Day, the worst day of the year, nothing on.
That's right. You're going back to the heady days of the 50s and 60s. We used to play on Christmas Day, of course. You'd love wouldn't you, Steve? A game on Christmas Day.
Back to back, yeah.
Yeah. Good to talk to you. And the book is available. It's a lot of fun. I think hopefully that's come across in the last 5 minutes. Ockley Books have published it, and it's out now. And would you do it again? Would you go back in 2021 if they ask you for a new one?
Well, in theory, you could write it every year, couldn't you?
You could.
just an almanac, almost.
Yeah. It could be a record of the sport on TV for the year. So,
go on. Just say there's only a couple of hundred copies left for Christmas, so get them while
they're hot. Okay.
Okay, brilliant. Okay, so Ogley, it's available on Amazon and everywhere else as well, isn't it, I take it?
Oh, yeah.
Brilliant. Good to talk to you, Steve. Thanks very much.
Thank you, mate.
Cheers, guys. Bye.
Steve Hill there, Wall of Sport, My Descent into Multi-Screen Madness. It is a lot of fun. It's a really funny book.
It's quite the commitment, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's a level. I mean, there's just sitting in the bath, setting up an iPad to watch Snoop
Two
in the bath.
Two iPads in the bath, and then watching an old Premier League game on repeat.
I would question myself. Here's a text from Castle
yeah.
in Birmingham. It says, I hadn't played football for 5 years after retiring. I was on holiday in Spain about 20 years ago. The hotel arranged a game between England holidaymakers and Spanish holidaymakers. I played up front, and the centre-half kept punching me in the back every time the ball came to me. So next time it came to him, I gave him an elbow in the ribs. He immediately punched me in the ear with a right hook. I turned around and punched him on the nose. On the evening, I heard someone say, I don't think Lopez will be playing Wednesday. Some idiot broke his nose today at football. I later found out it was Lopez Ricarte, who played for Real Sociedad. He'd only come for a weekend break because Real weren't playing that weekend. They had Champions League game midweek.
Really?
Blimey.
And he put him out of the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
That used to be a staple there years ago when the kind of the first of the Spanish package holidays, the game between the staff and the holidaymakers. And often a bit of an Anglo-German side would take shape.
Oh, that's nice.
Working in tandem to take on the waiters. There'd always be one waiter that said, oh, yeah, he was at Real Madrid when he was a kid. But it was a bit of a staple that back in the day.
Oh,
probably
nice.
Not so much now.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Yes, Cruyff All Binnie's back once again. We've plundered the, the shoot in focus features, and we're going to pit two players against each other. Max has got to guess who gave the answer. It all kicked off with Johan Cruyff and Fred Binnie, the former Brighton player. And beef stroganoff, really, is what we always come back
Absolutely.
To. Was that Cruyff or was that Binnie? Strangely, it was Binnie. Just a plain steak for Johan Cruyff. Not as cosmopolitan as maybe we all thought. So we learn things about the players sometimes.
Yeah.
And
we've been on a journey, haven't we?
Well,
we thought that journey ended with France Carr or Romeo Zondervan.
Which was weak, let's be honest.
I saw the disappointment in your face.
But we've done it today because I think it's quite topical because there's been a lot of talk in the last 24 hours after Arsenal's defeat to Burnley that Big Sam might be the answer. I think there was actually a call to the sports bar last night. The bloke said, bring him in. We're in a dogfight. Bring him in. So that seems to get a bit of traction, that idea.
Okay.
So I looked at the betting, and always in the betting for any manager's job, really, it's always Big Sam or Alan Kirbishley.
Oh, marvellous.
Al and Big Sam always feature. But how much do we actually really know about those two men?
Sure.
Or did we know about them during their playing days when Big Sam was at Bolton and Alan Kirbishley was doing his thing for Ian Danter's Birmingham City.
And do you think the odds for either manager may change after the clubs hear about the lives of Kirbishley and Allardyce?
If the Arsenal hierarchy are listening, I mean, Ada's given him the vote of confidence, but who knows? They may change their mind based on some of the answers you give and some of the answers that appeared in Shoop. So let's rock on, shall we? He's called Big Sam, isn't he?
Yeah.
Of course, we throw that about. But which of them is actually 6'2" tall and 13 stone 2 pounds during their playing days? Was it Big Sam or was that Alan Kirbishley? Who was the bigger of the two men?
That can't be Alan Kirbishley. It's about 5'7", isn't it? I'm going Allardyce.
You are. You've gone Big Sam. You were right,
yes,
too. Yeah.
Well,
Alan
so.
Wasn't that small. Alan was, he was 5'10½"
right,
and 11 stone 4. But he's Big Sam for a reason. But we always ease you in, don't we?
Yeah.
Who was behind the wheel of a Ford Capri at this stage? Was that Big Sam or was that Kerbs? Who was driving?
I'm not seeing Sam. I'm not seeing Big Sam in a Capri.
Really?
I'm not. I'm going full Kirbishley.
Well, you are right to. Nice. Yeah, he was in the Ford Capri, whereas Big Sam was driving the Hillman Hunter around Bolton at that time.
Of course he was.
So feel free to join in at home, folks, and see if you can get to the answers. Whose other favourite sport was cricket? Do you see Sam as a cricket fan or
I've spent a lot of time with Sam in this very room.
And when the crickets come on the telly, is he engaged?
Like you mean. And then he looks up.
And then it comes on and he's thinking, he loves it. Sri Lankan Premier League, never miss.
Kirbishley.
It was Kerbs, yeah. And can you guess? You could probably guess Sam's favourite sport at that time away from football.
Snooker?
No, it was golf.
Okay,
it
right.
was golf.
Okay.
It was going to be snooker or golf. So you're doing quite well. I think if you got
100%
you got
so
three
far.
Out of three, yeah.
No one's ever got 100%.
Whose favourite food was roast beef and Yorkshire pudding. Whose mark was that? Well, would you say? Was that Alan Kirbishley? Or?
Have an interesting chat on breakfast with Sam about toasties, and he went into great detail about his favourite toastie, and he did say, "I'm not a bechamel sauce man," as you could expect. I mean, unless you're throwing me a curveball, I'm going, curves could like that too. I'm going Big Sam.
You're right to go Big Sam. Yeah, in this particular super focus, Kerbs really didn't talk about any preferences food-wise.
Oh, really?
He could just take it or leave it, nothing in particular.
Fine. Very
so
open-minded.
Well done. You're doing very well.
Thanks.
Now, whose favourite band was this?
Are you reeling in the east? Stowing away the time.
That's called Steely Dan, but who was the big Steely Dan fan and probably still is? Alan Kirbishley or Steely Big Sam? Dan. Steely Dan, yeah.
Kirbishley.
You're absolutely spot on. Of course, his Alan's brother Bill managed the Who.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he's a man who loves his music.
Where was Sam? Quo? The Quo?
He was the Walrus of Love, not him personally. Barry White.
Oh, okay.
Excellent. In the Hillman Hunter. The 8-track cassette would go in, and it was probably Barry live at the Albert Hall.
Marvellous.
You're doing incredibly
marvellous.
Well. Sam, if you could go through the card, this would be history in the making.
Absolutely. We remember where we were. There's still plenty of time, though.
Whose dislike was media people who attack the game yet make a living from it? Hello? Al? I've seen you on Sky, and you, Big Sam. So, who was that? Who said that? Was that Alan Kirbishley or was that Big Sam?
Kirbishley.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, Sam's dislikes were travelling.
Yeah.
Sam didn't like travelling.
No.
If the Hillman Hunter left the immediate environment of Bolton, he would turn back. Whose favourite show featured this music, TV show? That's the way a driller defence, isn't it? Really? So, play that. So, is that Kerbs or is that Big Sam? Who was the big Benny Hill fan?
Allardyce.
Oh, this is getting him. I'm getting worried now because I could never live with this 10 out of 10. Yep, he liked 40 Towers and Monty Python and Benny Hill.
Oh, great. The tragedy is I'm really genuinely getting quite excited.
I know. Who saw themselves, if they weren't a footballer, what would they be? A chef. So is that Big Sam or is that Alan Kirbish? You saw a future in the kitchen. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I've got to choose one, haven't I?
Yeah, you have, yeah. Who might it be? I think.
Kirbishley.
I'm terribly sorry.
Oh, no.
It's gone. It was Big Sam. He saw himself as a chef, but obviously not working with a bechamel sauce. He wouldn't be making any parmos for anybody. Alan didn't know. Alan had no idea what he'd be doing.
Okay.
Now, Sam's already told us he doesn't like travelling.
No.
But we worked on the basis that he had travelled somewhere. But who? His favourite holiday resort was the Algarve in Portugal.
I mean, that is six of one, half a dozen of another with those two, I reckon.
Yeah.
I will.
Who favoured the Algarve?
The Algarve, Kirbishley.
Well, that's bold because I think Sam's got a place on So you might have gone Sam. Sam was Spain. So you are absolutely right. It was Kerbs. Kerbs love the Algarve.
It's 9
and
out of
finally.
10. Oh, no, 8 out of 9 so far.
Who said. Which person in the world would you most like to meet? Who went with John Cleese? Is that Big Sam?
Well, I've already had the Python clue.
It's a double whammy. It might be counterintuitive.
I'll go Allardyce.
You're absolutely right. Kerb said he was looking forward to meeting the England manager who gives him his first full cap.
Oh, okay, good answer.
So there we are. You did 9 out of 10.
Chefing from Allardyce
that
let me down.
I mean,
bit like Joan Armour trading let me down on the birthday sweep spread. Excuse me.
Do you think having worked with Sam, by osmosis, you've soaked up a lot of Sam?
I think that really helped.
You knew.
I'd done virtually no shows with Binnie or Cruyff, and I think it showed.
Has he still got the Hillman Hunter? Have you ever seen him in the car park? I doubt if he has, really.
I imagine him one of those big old Jags.
Yeah.
Anything?
I think that would be marvellous. Yeah, Damer Sovereign.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Well, there we are. That was this afternoon. Quite a performance, Max, in Cruyff or Binnie. I mean, I know you're coming away upset because you didn't get 10 out of 10.
I mean, it would have really rewritten the history books of Cruyff or Binnie, wouldn't it?
Would,
if I had got 10, maybe that would have killed the whole feature. But as it is,
there's life in it, and maybe it'll be back tomorrow.
The engraver was poised. It was that old thing you often see at the Open, the old engraved, but it never quite happened. But anyway, maybe another time. So that's us. We're back tomorrow from one. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.